Our next presenter is Sarah Kalach. She is the Campaign Alliance's advisor at Oxfam America. She manages their Sisters on the Planet Ambassador Program, which unites more than 270 women, leading American women, in advocacy to end hunger, poverty, and injustice worldwide. She also manages innovative advocacy partnerships with national organizations. And she came to Oxfam from Physicians for Human Rights. And I think you're ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Hello.
Good. So this is going to be sort of a policy advocacy presentation. You ready for that?
Yeah.
But I do have two charts and graphs, which I'm semi-proud of, but which are a little weird. So we'll see how it goes. Okay. So I'm going to talk about safety nets or roadblocks, how the Farm Bill creates obstacles for global food security and healthy communities. So how many of you know what's in the Farm Bill? Anybody? Okay, good. How many people have even heard of the Farm Bill? Excellent. And how many people know that the Farm Bill has a huge impact on international nutrition? Good. All right. Well, I'm going to go through just exactly how it does. I think I forgot to put in my disclosure slide, but I have nothing to disclose. So before I talk about the Farm Bill, first I just want to say generally, investments in agriculture have been going down over the past 20 years, and the real solution to nutrition and food security around the world is to support smallholder farmers to innovate and to build their capacity and to get access to markets. So that's the real solution. That said, we're not there yet. Oxfam does a lot of advocacy to make sure that this is happening, but in the meantime, there are people who are going hungry every day, and there are major food crises around the world, and we have to deal with them. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. Okay. So the U.S. Farm Bill was created to support a safety net for farmers, make sure that hungry citizens have access to food, and that there's protection for land and water. Unfortunately, over the past bunch of decades, the Farm Bill has instead become a cash cow for a set of vested interests at the expense of rural communities, the environment, and people who are facing famine across the world. So again, this presentation is going to look at how the Farm Bill undermines farmers and poor communities around the world and how we could change the policy to make sure it actually supports people who are hungry and farmers around the world. So what is food aid? In 2010, the United States provided more than $2.3 billion of food assistance to developing countries, which was about 2.5 million metric tons of grain, and we reached about 65 million people around the world who are hungry. Food aid is a really key part of our foreign policy. It saves lives, it reduces instability in countries around the world, and it saves communities from catastrophe. So it's a real main part of what we do. That said, as a global community, we're not coming close to covering the number of people who are hungry out there. So 2006 to 2009, the global community was able to meet about 70% of the need for food aid. 2010, it was about 63% of the need, and in 2011, we saw a major famine in the Horn of Africa, and we're now seeing one major food crisis in Sahel. So around the world, the demand for food aid is increasing, and again, we're not able to meet the full need. The United States provides 50% of the world's food aid, but we could feed 17 million more people if we reformed the systems and took power away from the agribusiness lobby, which is putting their profits above the lives of hungry people around the world. So how does the Farm Bill put the agribusiness lobby ahead of hungry people? Number one, the legislation requires that 75% of food aid be grown, bagged, fortified, and processed in the U.S. by ahead of hungry people, companies that contract with the USDA. 75% has to come from the United States. There's a bidding process, and why do we usually have bidding processes?
Keep costs down.
Keep costs down, right? It's not how it works. There's a couple of companies which have a monopoly on the bidding process itself, and that results in payments that are an average 11% over market. For corn, there have been payments that are 70% over market. Yeah, I mean, this is so crazy, sometimes it's hard for me to even talk about it because it's so crazy that it's still a policy. Anyway, so that's the first step. We're buying 75% of the food here in the United States at inflated prices. Well, where's the food? It's in the United States. Where's the hunger? It's in the United States, but it's also across oceans. So then we have to ship the food. The Farm Bill requires that food be shipped by U.S. companies on U.S.-flagged carrier ships. So 40% of the money that the United States puts towards food aid goes to shipping. So we're wasting money. What else are we wasting? Fuel, absolutely. Environmental issues. What else are we wasting? Time. What do hungry people not have a lot of? Time. So 2004 to 2008, food aid to Africa took about 147 days to reach. If we'd purchased food locally, it would have taken 35 to 40 days. It still takes a long time, but that's a huge amount of time. So that's the way that it's set up now. What is the solution that Oxfam is advocating for? We're advocating for more regional and local purchase. So what does that mean? When there was a famine in the Horn of Africa and people in Somalia were hungry, Uganda was still growing a lot of crops. And it would have been possible for the United States to purchase food in the region of Eastern, Southern, Central Africa and get it to people in need, to bolster the farmers in that region and to create a real market for them to build their capacity, and save a lot of money and save a lot of time. So in the last Farm Bill, there was a small pilot program, $60 million, to explore regional and local purchase. We want to make that a bigger part of the Farm Bill. So what does that look like? What are those two differences? Those two different systems look like. All right, so there was a food crisis in Tajikistan. Two different ways to get food aid there. The first one is to grow the food in Kansas and Oklahoma, get it down to Texas, put it on a U.S. flagged carrier ship. Yeah, kind of follow this. Get it to Germany, and then get it to Tajikistan. The other options included buying food from Russia or Kazakhstan and getting it down to Tajikistan, a lot closer. I don't know if you can see the prices up here also, a lot less expensive. So wheat flour, $877 a metric ton when purchased in the U.S. Local or regional purchase would have been $528. This is not a great system for global health and for hunger and for nutrition and for taxpayer dollars. But this chart just shows some of the lags in time. You can see especially with the brown, which is wheat, it took months and months longer for it to get there. So again, we're talking about time, we're talking about money, and we're talking about supporting farmers in countries in these regions to build a local food economy. I'll add one last thing. Anybody read Roger Thoreau? He writes a lot about hunger. So he just came out with a book called The Last Hunger Year, and he interviewed farmers in West Kenya last year when there was the famine in the Horn of Africa. And they said, we've got a bumper crop here, and we've got a ton of corn coming into the United States, and nobody's buying my corn. So that's just one example in the literature of how regional and local purchase can help both people facing famine and also farmers in that region. There's another part of the Farm Bill that has to do with food aid that is also a big challenge. And it's called monetization. How many people have heard of monetization? Great, so maybe you can explain it, because every time I have to, it's incredibly hard. So you guys gotta bear with me. I'm gonna read from my notes because it's a little bit confusing. Okay, so NGOs around the world need funds for long-term food security development work. So not necessarily food aid, but building food security in different communities. What's the best way to get them funds? Maybe a grant, maybe a check. Yes. Instead, one of the ways that the U.S. government gets funds to NGOs for long-term food security work is monetization. The U.S. gives the NGO food aid. The NGO sells it in the region where there's a food crisis and then uses that money to fund development programs. So this is an inherently inefficient system. You go from a bunch of cash in the United States, buying food in the United States at those inflated prices, shipping it, then selling it. And so the amount of cash that you start with is not the amount of cash that you end up with at the end. The Government Accounting Office found that this process and these transaction costs would remove about $219 million over the course of 3 years from the food system. It's also a huge risk for NGOs to be in the business of buying and selling food. And finally, again, it has an impact on local agricultural markets. So Oxfam is looking at monetization, and we are asking for it to no longer be a way to fund food development programs. This is a really controversial and challenging problem within the NGO community. There are some NGOs that depend on monetization for funding incredibly important food security programs. And there are others who said this is just not the way to go. Oxfam believes very strongly that this is not the way to go, but it doesn't mean that those programs don't need to be funded and shouldn't be funded. So I do want to say that. Okay, so these inefficiencies in the food aid program, as I said before, we could feed 17 million more people if we just took them out. We're not advocating for total regional and local purchase. We probably can't get there, and we're probably always going to need to buy some food from the United States. But there's different ways that you can go that will, again, be able to reach a lot more people. So if you had 33% of the farm bill was local and regional purchase, and you removed monetization, you could feed 7.3 million more people, and it goes up from there. Again, so we are advocating as Oxfam for a transition to greater use of local and regional purchase for food aid and an end to monetization. Does that sound good? Yeah, I think so too. So there's two other things in the Farm Bill that impact the lives of farmers and poor communities and that impact their food security. The first one is subsidies to U.S. farmers. So the Farm Bill includes a lot of subsidies to U.S. cotton, corn, and rice producers. And fundamentally, this distorts the market, and this puts farmers, poor farmers, across the world at a competitive disadvantage. And cotton is one of the ones that's been most controversial. So over 10 million households in West Africa depend on cotton for their survival. Cotton's a cash crop. So again, you can't eat cotton, but it's incredibly important for millions of households to supplement what they grow and to be able to educate their kids and to be able to build their lives. Again, there's four countries where it's particularly vital: Benin, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Mali. And those countries have been huge advocates to reduce subsidies that are in the Farm Bill. West African farmers can grow cotton at about 35 cents a pound versus 80 cents a pound in the U.S. But again, because farmers here get such big subsidies, it's not a competitive market. The loss to African farmers of subsidies in the U.S. Farm Bill is about $250 million a year. $250 million a year that, again, could go to feeding and building communities. I think there's always a challenge of, you know, not wanting to harm the U.S. economy either. And this is always going to be a question. It's always going to be a tension. We should know as public health advocates that 81% of the subsidies go to 10% of the cotton farmers here in the U.S. So it's not an equal playing field for anybody anywhere except those 10%. There's a very similar situation in Haiti with rice, and it's been very devastating to the rice farmers there. So subsidies in the Farm Bill are a big challenge to farmers around the world being able to grow both cash crops and food crops for their families. And finally, the Farm Bill is a huge, huge resource for conservation efforts. Billions and billions of dollars to protect highly erodible land and sensitive wetlands. Who knew that? I did not actually know that before I started working at Oxfam. And so it's actually incredibly important. And protecting this land is contributes to, hopefully, improvements around carbon that will help with climate change, which is a huge challenge for farmers around the world. So the current Farm Bill has $6 billion in cuts to conservation programs that are really, really important. Oxfam does not work directly on this. The Environmental Working Group has done phenomenal work on this. But one of the reasons why there's such a big cut is that there's a push to conserve less land so that we can grow more biofuels. 40% of the U.S. corn produced every year right now goes to biofuels instead of feeding people. So this is another big challenge. So again, the Farm Bill has billions of dollars that can go to conservation. We're looking at some cuts. And those changes in land use will increase carbon, and they will increase climate change. And this matters a lot for poor farmers around the world. Climate change is fundamentally going to change the way that we grow food, and this map just shows sort of how that's going to happen. There's a lot of different maps that look similar to this, looking at various different years, but around the equator, there's going to be a major, major challenge with food security and climate change. Where I live in Massachusetts, I'm going to have a longer growing season. I'm going to be fine. But poor farmers are going to be really challenged. So the Farm Bill has the opportunity to conserve millions of acres of land, which is like taking millions of cars off the road, and we have to make sure that it actually does that. Okay, so just, I think this is my last slide, the politics of the Farm Bill are incredibly challenging. Right now, the Senate has passed a version and the House has passed a version out of committee, but they've not voted on it. The Senate is much stronger on food aid reform. The House bill is an absolute disaster for nutrition here in the United States and abroad. So the House bill has really nothing on food aid reform, and it also cuts not $16, $16 billion from nutrition programs, which U.S. nutrition programs are primarily funded by the Farm Bill. So it is just a hot mess. There's not too much else to say there. So Senate passed the Farm Bill in June. The House did not bring it up for a vote before recess. And October 1, it expired for the first time in history. So there are some immediate and medium-term impacts to food aid. We're still able to support countries that need it, but in very quick succession, we may not be able to do everything that we can because there is no Farm Bill in place. Congresswoman Stabenow has said that they will vote on it after they come back from the election recess, so we will see. The House needs to pass their bill, which, by the way, is not good, and then they have to conference with the Senate, and it's never clear what we're going to come out with, and almost never are advocates actually happy with the bill that comes out. So it's going to be a complicated next couple of months trying to balance the needs of food aid reform with the needs of SNAP and nutrition programs here in the U.S., the need for farmers to have what they need to build their capacity. It's a very complicated and challenging bill, but I just want all of you to know that it has a huge impact on global malnutrition and that we need to really be engaged in it if we're interested in nutrition and be real advocates. Thank you.